this English edition of the Rayesto Show, we'll be talking about the presidential election of 2019, Prabowo versus Jokowi, Part 2. I'm Rayesto, and this is the Rayesto Show. Okay, so if you also follow the podcast, you will notice that I've actually done this edition, but in Bahasa Indonesia. I was thinking, why not do the exact same podcast in English? Obviously, it won't be a word-for-word translation of that podcast. I will just redo the same talking points, but, you know, there might be some differences, there might not. But let's just go through it. Okay, there are a few points that I want to make in this podcast. We'll discuss about Jokowi's choice for his running mate, that is Kiai Ma'ruf Amin, a very conservative vigor within Indonesian politics. When it comes to conservatism, it doesn't really get more conservative than Ma'ruf Amin. Next, I will also be talking about Sandiaga Uno and his rise to the vice presidential ticket on the Prabowo-Gerindra coalition. You know, his name also was not the first in mind for many people prior to his eventual choosing. And last, we'll talk some predictions. Okay, I have some predictions regarding the presidential elections and also some predictions for the parliamentary elections and some predictions regarding the state of affairs prior to and perhaps after the 2019 election. So let's just get down to it. So Ma'ruf Amin was chosen by the coalition of Jokowi supporting parties about a few weeks ago. And he wasn't initially part of the names that were thought as being potential to be Jokowi's running mates. Okay, and until the very last minute, I think it was 5 minutes before he was announced to be the running mate, that everybody had been thinking that it would have been Mahfud MD, another politician, former Chief Justice of the Indonesian Constitutional Court. But he also thought he would be chosen as the running mate until 5 minutes ago, right? But in the end, Jokowi's coalition decided to go with Ma'ruf Amin, a very pragmatic and a very calculated decision, I would say. So let's just talk about Ma'ruf Amin. Okay, let's not talk too much regarding this, but let's talk about Ma'ruf Amin and who he is and why he was chosen and what this means for the campaign. So Ma'ruf Amin is the Rais Am of Nahdlatul Ulama. Nahdlatul Ulama is the largest Muslim organization in Indonesia. Not just the largest Muslim organization in Indonesia. I think Nahdlatul Ulama is the largest mass organization in Indonesia that happens to be Muslim. So his Rais Am is a position, I think, somewhat similar to president commissioner or president of the board or something like that. And aside from that, he's also the chair of the Indonesian Ulama Council. So he's a very, very powerful figure in Indonesian Islam spheres. And he's 75 years old. So that's also perhaps part of the reason why Jokowi's coalition chose him, because he is not thought to be running in 2024. But regarding that, Ma'ruf Amin is a very controversial figure. So during his stint in the Indonesian Ulama Council, I think last year or 2 years ago, he was at the forefront of the controversy against Basuki Cahayapurnama, then governor of Jakarta, who said in one of his speeches a statement that was widely thought by people as being blasphemous. The Indonesian Ulama Council then issued a fatwa saying that what he had said indeed was blasphemous. I think if you're not familiar with the story, Google it up. The Basuki Cahayapurnama case, let's not talk too much about that. But his Indonesian Ulama Council issued that fatwa that launched a massive demonstrations and rallies against Ahok. There's this group that names themselves the National Movement to Defend the MUE's fatwas, And they were not defending all MUI fatwas. They were just defending one fatwa in particular, and that is the fatwa that that states that what Ahok had said or what Wasuki had said was blasphemous. So he's not very popular amongst Ahok's or Wasuki's fans. His voters are not really happy with the decision that Jokowi has chosen Ma'ruf Amin as their as Jokowi's vice presidential running mate. Obviously, a lot of Jokowi's voters are Ahok's voters, so I think Jokowi is gambling here a little bit in his decision, that he thinks that he can lose some votes, but he'll gain more with his decision of choosing Ma'ruf Amin. Some other fatwas that are problematic or controversial are fatwas that says that liberalism and pluralism and secularism is against Islamic teachings. He's also his MUI has also issued statements that the Ahmadi and Shiite sects of Islam are against Islamic teachings, and as a result there have been a few intolerance acts taking place as a direct or indirect result of that fatwa being issued at the time that Ma'ruf Amin was the head of the fatwa council of the Indonesian Ulama Council. So this is a very pragmatic. There's another thing regarding LGBT. So I think MUI during his stint also issued statements or fatwas against homosexualities, and that proposed that homosexual acts be punished criminally in Indonesia or something like that. So he's also not very popular amongst the Indonesian LGBT community. So that's also problematic. And regarding his choice, eventually, this is just Jokowi being pragmatic, because Jokowi had faced massive hoaxes and smears that has said that he is against Islam, that he is not a friendly candidate for Muslims, that he is communist, or that all these negative things being said against Jokowi. Some are said in religious institutions and in mosques and these settings. And so he needs a vice presidential candidate that can refute those smears. And what better than Ma'ruf Amin when you want to be seen as somebody that's close with Islam, that has a friendly relationship with the religion? Why not? What better candidate than Ma'ruf Amin? Because frankly, when it comes to Islamist politicians, nobody is more conservative or nobody is more Islamic than Ma'ruf Amin. Obviously, he is the head of the Indonesian Ulama Council. He's also the head of the president of the Nahdlatul Ulama, right? So it makes it very difficult for his opposition to keep using old tactics against him that he had faced in 2012, in 2014, that, faced Ahok in 2016, 2017. So I think this is a very, very pragmatic decision by Jokowi. It's now difficult to smear Jokowi as anti-Muslim or something like that. It's not possible. So as I said before, there are a lot of people that have been disappointed with this decision. Ahok supporters, secularists that think Jokowi is their final bastion against the Islamic state, bastion against conservatism, I would say. They are also disappointed that Jokowi has chosen this route, that Jokowi himself is now turning conservative with this choice, with Ma'ruf Amin being his vice presidential running mate. But on the other hand, there's also a lot of votes to be gained. So people who are Islamists, people who want more role for Islam in Indonesian governments. They had been very anti-Jokowi until now. They are also now confused, or maybe are more open to the idea of Jokowi as their president in the second term because he's chosen a very conservative candidate as his running mate. And the calculation that Jokowi makes is that the number of people who are disenfranchised or disappointed with his choice to the point that they would not vote for Jokowi in the 2019 election is not as much as the number of, not as many as the number of votes that he could gain by choosing Maruf Amin as his running mate, or the number of votes that he will not lose as a result of smear campaigns being made against him is more than the number of people that decides to, you know, not vote for him. Because he also knows that his voters, or people who vote for him, who voted for him in 2014, people who are secularist, people who are part of the LGBT community, people who voted for Ahok, there's not too much chance that they would, you know, vote for the other guy, that they would vote for Prabowo, probably not. Probably the most that they could do is just stay at home or not vote for anybody. And his calculation probably says that it still made sense. And I agree with that. I think it made perfect sense for Jokowi to go with Maruf Amin. I'm going to say that I'm also part of the people who are disappointed with Jokowi. I would have hoped for a vice presidential candidate that can really help him govern, that can really get, you know, policies, good policies made. I was thinking probably somebody like Sri Mulyani or some economist, something like that. But obviously I was being naive, and that a candidate like Sri Mulyani cannot possibly win him votes to the extent that Maruf Amin could. And so that is probably why Jokowi has chosen Maruf Amin. Okay, so let's talk about Prabowo coalition and how they chose Sandiaga Uno as the vice presidential candidate. So this is also very surprising. So not a lot of people predicted that Prabowo would choose Sandiaga as his running mate. And, you know, I was also part of the groups of people who thought that Prabowo himself would not run for president himself, that he would give way for some other people, perhaps Anis, to run with Agus Harimurti Yudhoyono or something like that, because that would have more chance to defeat Jokowi, probably. A fresh set of candidates would probably have more chance against Jokowi than a rematch against Prabowo. But in the end, that didn't happen. In the end, Prabowo chose to run himself, and he chose Sandiaga as his running mate. So a lot of people thought that if Prabowo were to run himself, that his vice presidential candidate would be Ahaye or Agus Harimurti, because prior to the deadline, Prabowo had really been very close with Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, of course, ex-president of Indonesia. There's also an ulama, I don't know how to translate that in English. So an ulama ijtima. Ijtima is like a, not really sure what that word is in English. It's like a consensus by the ulemas that suggests to the Prabowo coalition that the vice presidential candidate should be either Abdul Somad or Salim Segaf. Salim Segaf is the president of Prosperous Justice Party. Abdul Somad is a well-known cleric in Indonesia. But I think this is also meant to be a coy. I didn't think for a second that that could be true. So another candidate for the vice presidential nominee could have been Anies Baswedan, the governor of Jakarta, because prior to the deadline date, people have been, you know, praising him and have been, you know, trying to up his profile and mentioning that he is the governor of Indonesia or something like that, comparing him with Jokowi and such, but, you know, he didn't end up getting selected. And after, you know, since, and we've since not seen such kind comments against Anies anymore, because obviously he's not no longer a candidate for president. The reason why I didn't think Prabowo would run himself is because he hadn't been as willing, and he hadn't been as passionate as he had been in 2014. Remember, if you remember, in 2014, you know, a couple of years before the election proper, he had had a lot of advertising in television. I think it was the some sort of farmers association that he was the head of. That ad always aired on television. And also when it comes to his electability is far below Jokowi. So it's much more strategic to run a candidate other than Prabowo. But in the end, in the last minute, he chose to run himself and he chose Sandiaga as his running mate. And this is also very surprising because Sandiaga is not part of the people that have been in contention as his running mate. And Sandiaga is somebody from his own party. So it's something that's it's not ideal if you have a coalition that, and you chose instead to field two candidates that are both from your own political party. There's also massive backlash. So Andy Arif, a Democrat politician, has kept tweeting regarding this. He has mentioned that Sandiaga paid a sum of almost 1 trillion rupiah to Prosperous Justice Party and the National Mandate Party. 500 billion rupiah each in order to support them, in order to support him to be vice presidential running mate. You know, all this went on for days. Publicly, the Democrats kept supporting Prabowo as for president. But in the end, there are lots of Democratic politicians that have crossed the aisle to the other side. Dedy Mizwar, of course, is a Democrat, and he is now the spokesperson for Jokowi, one of the spokespersons for Jokowi. So a lot of mess in the Democratic Party. Basically, I think they're playing this on both sides. They want to be seen as a supporter of the Prabowo coalition, but at the same time, they also want to keep their leverage if in fact Jokowi wins the presidency. Regarding the choice of Sandiaga, I think this is Gerindra saying that they don't really that their main focus will not be the 2019 presidential election. They would focus instead on the parliamentary election. I think the moment that Jokowi chooses Maruf Amin, it's game over for them, and they know it. They know that whoever they field, whether it be Anies Baswedan or Agus Harimurti or what have you, they don't stand a chance in the presidential election, and they should instead focus on the parliamentary election. I think Sandiaga's the choice of Sandiaga as vice presidential nominee is a testament to that. They want, and that Prabowo remains on the top of the ticket is also a statement to focus on the parliamentary election. Why? Because they want Gerindra voter base to be energized for the election so that they will come to the voting booth, vote for Prabowo Sandi on the presidential ticket, but more importantly, vote for Gerindra on the parliamentary ballot. If they chose to field Anies Baswedan, for example, they might stand more chance of beating Jokowi. But some voters, some Gerindra voters, might not be as energized to come to the voting booth and get their friends to come to the voting booth and vote for both that and Gerindra. So I think the decision to remain on the top of the ballot is a pragmatic one, and saying that people should come to the voting booth and vote for Gerindra. So this is a way to consolidate the base to turn out the vote and vote for Gerindra. And after this, we'll talk about some predictions regarding the outcome of the 2019 presidential elections and parliamentary elections. But first, I want to remind you that if you haven't followed me on SoundCloud or haven't subscribed on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please do so. Please support the Raya's to Show. We're an Indonesian podcast that discusses politics, economics, and anything in between. So, for all of this, I have some predictions regarding 2019 elections. First, as I've said, and I think as everybody thinks, it's not a really controversial prediction. I think Jokowi will win the 2019 presidential election. That said, I think Gerindra will win the 2019 parliamentary elections. I think they stand a chance to get more than 20% of the vote. You know, if Jokowi wins the presidential election by 60%, as SBY or Susilo Bambang did in 2009, and if Jokowi just repeats that feat, that means Prabowo gets 40% of the vote. And if just half of Prabowo voters vote for Gerindra on the parliamentary ballot, that means Gerindra will get 20% of the vote, and that is probably enough to be the winning party in parliament. So I think that's the plan, and I think I don't see any reason why that doesn't materialize. So I think those are my predictions for both the ballots. So another prediction is that a lot of parties that are in the government coalition will find it difficult to get votes, and it will find it difficult to pass the parliamentary threshold. That's 4%. Okay, so parties like Hanura, parties like PPP, what's Hanura in English? National Conscience Party. PPP is the United Development Party. These parties, these smaller parties in the Jokowi coalition, will find it difficult to get past the parliamentary threshold. Of course, past either the Indonesian Solidarity Party, the new party for millennials, would find it really hard to get votes in the parliamentary elections. Why? Because here's the deal: you're a party who stance is more of the same. You know, if you're a party and your stance is that the government is doing okay and let's continue this and let's go for more of the same, why would anyone vote for you? Why not vote for the bigger party? Or why not vote for Jokowi's party itself? Why not vote for PDIP? Why not vote for the bigger party, Golkar, perhaps? Why vote for PAS-E? Why vote for PPP? You don't have a platform, especially because the parliamentary elections are held at the same time with the presidential ballots. So there's no particular platform that you might be in favor of. So, for instance, in 2014, on the parliamentary ballot and the parliamentary election, everybody can have their own platforms. Everybody can say that if you vote for this party, then this is what we're going to do. These are the policies that we will promulgate if we get to parliament. And then 2 months or 3 months later, there's the presidential elections, and they'll choose whichever presidential nominees courted them. But now, as the presidential and parliamentary elections are held at the same time, there's not really time to promulgate your own ideas or your own platforms. All you do is say how great Jokowi has been governing in his first term, and so all they can do is say that Jokowi has done well. Let's vote for Jokowi in the second term, and we'll continue all his great policies, and let's go for more of the same. But if we should go for more of the same, why should I vote for you? You know, why not vote for PDIP, his own party, right? So I'm guessing there are a lot of. It's going to be really difficult for these parties to get past the parliamentary threshold. I think those are my predictions regarding the results of the election. Another prediction would be that a lot of people would choose to sit out this election. A lot of people would not want to cast their votes because maybe they are disenfranchised. Maybe some AHOK voters will not stand to vote for Ma'ruf Amin. Maybe some. Maybe some people in the who were initially against Jokowi, maybe they don't know anymore. Maybe they don't know to vote against Ma'ruf Amin, their leader. So it's I'm guessing that the Golput is cast sitting out the election in Indonesian terms will rise in the 2019 elections. Okay, on polarization, I think this. This will be good for polarization in Indonesia. Indonesia has been really polarized, I think, starting 2012. It got more polarized in 2014, especially in 2017, the Jakarta gubernatorial elections, I think, with the notion that Ma'ruf Amin is now on Jokowi's side. I think polarization should should go down a bit, should decrease a bit. Or maybe instead of two polars, we can have multipolars. We can have Ahok's polar. We can have Ahok's front. We can have Jokowi's front. We can have Prabowo's front. We can have different fronts. And I think that's better than just having two fronts fighting against one another. So in that sense, I think it might be a good thing for the country as a whole, these four candidates the way they are, because it should really decrease the volume, decrease the polarization levels that we have in this country. And another point that I want to make, you know, that I forgot to mention, is that everybody seems to be behaving in the way that is most pragmatic for them. So obviously it starts with Jokowi choosing Maruf Amin is a very pragmatic choice. He cannot choose a better candidate for his running mate if the goal is just to get reelected, right? But with Jokowi choosing Maruf Amin, the most pragmatic option for Prabowo obviously is, as I've discussed, to focus on the parliamentary elections. And I think that's what he's doing. For the Prosperous Justice Party, it's still very pragmatic to still remain with Prabowo, especially if what Andi Arief accused of happening is the case, that they get, you know, some fresh cash to run their campaigns. $500 billion is not a small amount of money. And they couldn't really switch sides. I mean, who would have guessed? You know, what would have happened to their voter base if they decided to switch sides and go with Jokowi? You know, they'll lose some votes in that case. So in order to protect their votes, they chose to remain with the Prabowo coalition. The same can be said with the National Mandate Party, obviously Amin Rais, which I don't know if he still holds some official position within the party, but even if he doesn't, he's still a very influential figure within that party. I don't think they would go against him. He's a very staunch critic of Jokowi. Obviously, PAN or the National Mandate Party has to be against Jokowi. So that's also still a very pragmatic pragmatic choice to remain with the Prabowo coalition. The Democrats, obviously very logical to, you know, be on both sides because they won't really benefit if they choose to remain on just one side. They want to have leverage if, in fact, Jokowi wins the presidential election. Maybe they can say that, you know, some of our members have helped your campaign, and so we should get something in return, maybe a cabinet position or what have you. We'll see. But everybody has been behaving in the way that's most beneficial for them, and so, you know, let's just see in 2019 how things will unfold, and let's just hope for the best. Let's just hope for a great election to come up, and I'm not sure if I'm going to vote, but we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's okay not to vote, and I think that's my final point here. It's okay not to vote if you don't think that any of these politicians are in line with what all the policy ideas or your political stances. It's okay not to vote. Just sit out the election. You know, nothing too bad is going to happen, because, you know, I don't see one. You know, there's the lesser of two evils argument, but I don't know who the lesser of two evils is when it comes to Jokowi Maruf against Prabowo Sandi. So I don't know. You know, just sit out the election if you don't feel like going. But if you do want to sit out the election, still go to the voting booth, rip off the paper or something like that. Don't just stay at home, because then your voting ballot can be used by, you know, someone else. So okay, that's it for this English version of the last edition of this podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week or in the next 2 weeks, hopefully. See you.